All right, everybody. Well, the first two episodes dropped last week. The numbers were kind of awful, but that's fine. You guys are great. I love you guys. And this week, we are graced by the presence of Michael Avenatti. Now, this is an old interview from before, you know, everything this week. And I'm going to talk about everything this week before we do. Michael Avenatti got arrested, which is interesting because a lot of people are either naturally assuming that inherently he did it or jumping to his defense. And there's not a really, really big middle there. And nobody's really kind of taking the approach I'm taking, which is what I want to talk to you about. I think that there's a presumption of innocence in this country. And I think that we have to wait for more evidence to come out before we inherently just assume that this person did this, committed this horrible crime. And I think we've kind of fallen into a place where, because of the way that our minds work when it comes to news and because of the way that everything works with the internet and everything, the second we see a story, it's true no matter what. So look, I don't know anything about what happened with Avenatti. I don't know the real story, and I'm going to withhold my judgment until we actually hear about the alleged crime. But first, I want to talk about, I said but first earlier, now we're at second or third. I want to talk about Avenatti's claims after what happened, which are that he is coming for Jacob Wohl. Now, I don't really know much about Jacob Wohl. I know that he's just one of those shit stirrers who basically is a professional shit stirrer, which is different than a shit poster. A shit poster is somebody who just posts a bunch of garbage online and gets paid for it. But Jacob Wohl undoubtedly is a shit stirrer. So this is the kid that allegedly created some sort of conspiracy to frame Mueller for some sort of crime. I don't really know how that went down. I mean, me saying his name enough is just giving him more attention than he deserves. It's like, you know, I always say that there needs to be no notoriety for school shooters. And I think that there should be no notoriety for people who are just jackasses for the sake of being jackasses. Look, I don't know what's going on with the Avenatti thing. I'm not going to make any assumptions. I know Michael personally. He doesn't seem like a guy who would do that to anyone. He seems like a nice guy. But again, I don't fucking know. So what's going to happen right now is I'm going to cut to an old interview with Avenatti. And I'm excited for you guys to hear it.
Thanks for joining me. It's great to see you again. So Michael represents a side of rhetoric that I so love, which is willing to debate. Because what you've seen recently from a lot of people, especially people who are looking into presidential runs in the next couple years, is that folks aren't debating anymore. People are going up there talking and they're not willing to get their hands dirty. How do you feel about that?
Well, I mean, I think that we are in a fight for the future of the Republic right now, frankly. And I think the fight's going to continue over the next 2 years. And I don't believe that you're going to succeed in that fight by talking about puppies and daisies.
Well, not yet anyway, not until that's
point. Look, there's going to first be a fight for the future of the Democratic Party, and then there's going to be a fight as it relates to the general election. And there's a lot of people, for instance, in 2020 that are going to run, and I think a number of them would make an exceptional president, but I don't think many of them have a shot of beating Donald Trump, because this is a very unique situation in our history. And if the Democratic Party thinks that they're going to nominate someone that is going to speak in terms of inspiration and a vision for the country primarily without the ability to do battle against Donald Trump, then people should not be surprised when they're sitting on their couch or in their favorite chair on election night of 2020 and the same result happens that happened in 2016. Because I don't care how much experience you have, I don't care how good you would be in the office of the presidency, I don't care what your policy positions are, if you can't beat Donald Trump, you should not be running for the nomination of the Democratic Party. Now, let me say this. That is presuming that the economy stays where it is and there's no significant war or other international incident. Now, if the economy changes or if there's an international incident or something of that nature, I think it's a different story. But I think too many people, as I'm traveling around the country, too many people are underestimating Donald Trump and his ability to win re-election in 2020. It is very difficult to unseat, as you know, and as many of you know, it's nearly impossible to unseat an incumbent president with an economy that is in decent shape. It's almost unheard of. And you're not going to do it talking about puppies and daisies and in platitudes. It's just not going to happen. Now, look, I wish it was different. I mean, I'm not a, you know, I don't think this is a good thing. I don't think the level of political discourse in this country is anywhere close to where it should be. You know, I'm disgusted by the divisiveness in the nation. I'm disgusted by the fact that the president travels around and presides over various rallies and incites people. This is not a good thing for America. It's not a good thing for this country. But let me be really clear about something. You don't get a chance to change that. You don't get a chance to unify people. You don't get a chance to lower the level of discourse and start acting as one nation unless you win the election in 2020. First, you got to win, and then you can govern and restore. And it's just that simple.
Sure, and you hit on something that's really been bothering me lately, which is a lot of people in more left-wing circles that I've spoken to are so convinced that Trump is going to be taken down in 2020 that they're picking from a smorgasbord of Democratic candidates saying, like, ooh, who do we think would lead the country the best? And while I think that's important, we also need to think, who can actually fight here? And what you saw in the Republican primary last year was President Trump was able to take all these people down because they didn't expect somebody like him to actually show up. So when Marco Rubio was being called Little Marco, Ted Cruz was being called Lying Ted, and Trump was attacking the appearance of his wife. They were sitting there and they were baffled because they had never seen something so preposterous and inflammatorily stupid. So I got to ask you, in the Democratic primary, which is looking like it's going to be a circus and a half, what do you want to see from a leader in regards to how they plan on taking Trump on? I understand that it's not about the soft stuff. It's about you being an ideologue, but being an ideologue who's willing to get their hands dirty for the fight. When it comes to the future of the country, how do you fight Trump while also showing what you want to do differently?
I mean, I think it's going to have to be a two-pronged approach. You're clearly going to have a vision for where you want to take the country, but you're also going to have to be willing, if necessary, to crawl down in the gutter where this guy lives and where he operates and to beat him at his own game. And if you can't do that, you don't belong in the race. Because the fact of the matter is that Donald Trump, for as moronic as he is on a host of things, he's very good at a handful of things that happen to assist him in winning elections. You know, I watched that 60 Minutes interview the other night. Now, he's not talking to me. You know, I was turned off completely by a number of the things that he said. But from his political position and what he's trying to, the messages that he's trying to convey relating to his ability to succeed, it was brilliant. He met every one of his marks along the way. Look, there's two questions in my view as it relates to 2020 and the Democratic nomination. The first question is, would the prospective nominee make a better president than Donald Trump? Now, that question's easy. That can be answered in the affirmative for 20 or 30 million Americans and probably a lot of household pets, in my view. Right?
No, I have to tell you something. My older brother's in the front row. His cat is named Stormy.
There's about 20 bad jokes that could be made in connection with that, but I'm going to leave it alone. But anyhow, so that's the first question. The first question is, would the person make a better president? And I think the answer is going to be yes for everybody in the Democratic field. The second question is the money question. It's the most important and, in my view, the question. And that is, can the person actually beat Donald Trump? Not what we would hope for, not what we would wish for, not what we would want if the election was in 1960 or 1992 or 2008 or some other time, but the time in which we find ourselves right now or in 2020. And I think if Democrats are not honest with themselves and if they're not honest with each other, that Donald Trump will be reelected to the White House in 2020 and everybody will be looking around saying, once again, you know, how did this happen? Why didn't the message of hope and inspiration and puppies and daisies went out? And the fact of the matter is, again, this is a very unique situation in our nation's history. And it's going to take somebody that is willing to do battle with this guy where he lives, down in the gutter, and go toe-to-toe with him. And if anyone doubts that, all you have to do is look at the other 16 or 17 individuals that he beat along the way in 2016. If the Democrats turn around and they nominate someone that is consistent with the individuals that he has already beat, they should not be surprised if the outcome's the same. I mean, that's the definition of insanity, is doing the same thing time and time again and expecting a different outcome. And again, I don't think this is a good thing. I want to be really clear about this, but I'm not interested necessarily in having an academic conference for 3 days somewhere talking about the way things should be. I prefer to be in the moment and tell it like it is. And this is my view. You know, you go to a lot of these flyover states. You know, I spent a lot of time in California. I spent a lot of time in New York. But I was raised in the Midwest, and I've spent a lot of time traveling the country over the last few months. And you go to a lot of these flyover states, go spend some time in Michigan and Ohio and Illinois and Western Pennsylvania, and you talk to voters in these areas, they're not disgusted generally by Donald Trump. You're not going to convince them to displace Donald Trump by a message of inspiration and hope, because from their perspective, they're not that disgusted by it. Now, I'm turned off by that. I'm sure you don't like it.
Not a fan, no.
No, okay. So, but
let me ask you, where
are
you born?
This is the real world. I mean, if you really spend time in these areas, you got to understand what this dynamic is. Now, again, if the economy softens or there's a major international incident, then that completely changes my viewpoint on this. But as we sit right now, that is what I think.
But first, I want to tell you about Anchor again, which is the company that's distributing this podcast, and they want to distribute your podcast too, all right? Now, when I was trying to get this podcast off the ground, I did not know how to do anything. I didn't know how to record an episode. I didn't know how to find background music. I didn't know how to do anything with audio, literally. Like, I looked at the world and I said, wow, every jackass thinks they can have a podcast now, but how are they making this happen? How are they taking these words and putting them onto my iPhone? Well, Anchor is how. The answer to every single one of these questions is really simple. It's Anchor. Anchor is the one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. And best of all, it's 100% free and 100% ridiculously easy to use. Seriously, I could not believe how easy it is. I've only had to talk to them like two or three times, which for them must be a delight because I'm a fucker. But if you've always wanted to start a podcast, if you think what you have to say has any value to it, unlike my bullshit, go to anchor.fm/start today. Join me in the diverse community of podcasters already using Anchor. That's anchor.fm/start, and I cannot wait to hear what you all come up with. Let me, in this news cycle, we've dealt with the Kavanaugh stuff, we've dealt with Trump's flippant stupidity leading to him calling people horse face and other garbage like that. We've dealt with Tucker calling you creepy porn lawyer, which is just unfettered crap, but I think that serves, I think that's worse for him than it is for anybody, because it just shows the fact that the people doing that show aren't willing to act like adults. I want to ask you some things that are a little bit more positive. Of all the presidents, of all the inspiring speeches that we've gotten from presidents in our time as a country, what's your favorite? I know that's a little strange to ask. I'll give you an example. My friend Alfonso will watch President Reagan's speech after the Challenger blew up maybe once a day because he tears up every time. What do you think is the most inspirational?
Well, I mean, you know, I didn't necessarily agree with his politics, but I thought Ronald Reagan was one of the greatest communicators in modern political times. I don't think there's any question about that.
Sure.
You know, I still hang my hat on JFK's inauguration speech. I mean, I think it's very difficult to argue against that one. You know, as it relates to convention speeches, I personally think that Mario Cuomo's 1984 Tale of Two Cities speech was an incredible speech. For those who have not seen that or read it, I would urge you to read that speech. It left a big mark on me. I was 13 years of age at the time. And I just read it again a couple weeks ago, and I thought it was a remarkable address that he gave at the 1984 Democratic Convention.
Sure. And of all the presidents that we've had, let's go pre-World War II. Favorite president?
FDR.
FDR, okay, that's a great one. Are you a Jefferson guy? You seem more like a Federalist than anti-Federalist.
I'm more of a George Washington kind of guy.
Okay, yeah.
It's difficult to argue against George Washington.
Washington was apparently one of the greatest delegators of our time, and I wish I had those skills. And in regards to leadership, what we've seen a lot recently with rhetoric is that President Trump has been praising a lot of leaders, not even necessarily praising, but he's been refusing to strong arm leaders who have done these disgusting things. And I'm trying not to be too topical on the show, but with the Saudi Arabia situation, we saw this being called as, what was it, a rogue killing, something like that. What would you do in this situation with Saudi Arabia?
Well, I mean, first of all, let's call it what it is. I mean, it's a murder journalist who had permanent U.S. residency, and we cannot allow nations to lure journalists or individuals residing here in the United States into consulates or into situations and then kill them and dismember them and lie about it. I mean, we can't allow that. You know, I don't care how big the contract is. By the way, there's you know, at first the jobs, it was 30,000 jobs, then it was 40,000 jobs, then it was 60,000 jobs. Now Donald Trump wants America to believe it's about 600,000 jobs. But who knows, maybe by 7 o'clock tonight it'll be 1,000,002. I don't know how many jobs it's going to be. But look, we cannot allow countries like Saudi or any other entity or country around the world to dismember a U.S. journalist and then lie about it. We just can't allow that. You know, we heard all this rhetoric from Donald Trump during the 2016 and 2015 years about how President Barack Obama was weak and he would draw the line, and then when a country would cross the line, he would move the line. And we heard all of this rhetoric, all of this tough guy talk, right? And this is what we hear from Donald Trump on a consistent basis. The guy talks really tough, but when you really get down to it, he's weak, he's pathetic. And the fact that he has not come out and call this what it is, and let's call it what it is, it's a murder. It's an absolutely state-sanctioned murder. And if anybody here and anybody in the world legitimately believes that there were 15 or 16 rogue individuals sent from Saudi into a consulate to dismember an American journalist without approval at the highest levels of the Saudi government, if anybody really believes that, they know absolutely nothing about Saudi and the way that it operates, because that is not what happens in connection with that regime. But he needs to call it like it is, be straight up about it, and there needs to be severe consequences for this. You cannot allow this, because look, this is supposedly a U.S. ally. Now, if a U.S. ally thinks that they can get away with something like this, and once you send the message to the world that this is permitted and that the U.S. is not going to respond, what do you think that's going to do as it relates to other rogue dictators and other countries that are not necessarily on good terms with the United States? I mean, you're going to basically throw the gates open, and you're going to send a message around the world that you can basically do whatever you want, and there's not going to be consequences for it. And that is not the message that you want to send in today's day and age, especially at this stage, because of the conduct of Donald Trump before this killing, he has interjected so much instability into the world stage. I mean, our allies of the last 60, 70, 80, 100 years, they're looking around wondering whether they can count on America, where America stands, based on the prior conduct of this president over the last 18 months. That in and of itself has interjected a lot of instability and question marks on the world stage. It's a very dangerous situation. But, you know, again, this whole idea that these are rogue killers, and at first the Saudis said that he left under his own power, you know, I'm sure many of us remember that explanation. Well, that's now turned out to be a bunch of nonsense. Now they want everybody to believe that he just happened to go there, and there happened to be 15, 16, 18 individuals, and they had a skirmish or a fight broke out.
First of all, what kind of dictator are you if you need 15 individuals to kill somebody? I'm sorry, I know that's a horrible thing to say, but you are a crappy, evil dictator kook if you need 15 assassins. Michael, I'm going to let you go in a second, but I have one more thing to ask you. This is incredibly topical, I'd like to think. Favorite movie?
Favorite movie?
Yeah. You seem like a Scorsese guy for some reason.
You know, I like The Verdict.
The Verdict, interesting. Are you like Tarantino at all?
Yeah.
Tarantino guy?
I like The Verdict. I like Goodfellas. I like
it's a classic.
Casino. I like some of these movies.
So you know, those are all good, definitely. How do you feel about La La Land?
Well, I mean, I live here. I like it.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Well, everybody, Michael Avenatti, thank you so much for joining me today. It's really a pleasure. Look, that's Michael. I like Avenatti, and I really hope none of this is true. If it is, I'll bite on these words. I'll bite on this whole episode, frankly. If this all comes out to be true and he's not exonerated and he's charged criminally, I am going to choke on this episode. You know, we talked about some things in that interview that I think you all need to think about. You know, what is somebody who can stand up to the Donald in 2020? It's going to be incredibly difficult considering the fact that a sitting president in this type of economy has not been taken down since the late 1800s. And subscribe, please, for God's sake. Tell your friends. Tell people that don't even listen to it to just download it anyway. Do you guys hear the bleeding desperation in my voice? All right, goodbye. I'll put out another episode next week.